Welcome to Under the Influence, the podcast where we help chiropractors improve their communication skills so they can help more people and help people more. I'm your host, Dr. Martin Harvey. I'm a chiropractor and I'm an expert in communicating the value of chiropractic. Today on Under the Influence, I'm going to be talking about an approach that you can use in your practice for people who are coming in repeatedly on a pain basis. So it was prompted by a post from one of the members of my aligned practice group. And she said, my win for last week was that I had a great bridging conversation with a reactivation who loves chiro but uses it on a pain basis. I was able to genuinely link it to his lifestyle and what he loves doing to make him say, I think that prevention and wellness option is what I need to do from now on. And there's been, within aligned practice, we're having a big focus on effective communication strategies in different contexts. And one of the contexts that we've focused on in the last little part has been on reactivation specifically, and it combines a couple of strategies that I think are super important for us if we want to upgrade our communication, which is using their experience, asking permission, and bridging. Anyway, I'm going to map out a really simple three-step process that you can use in your practice for people who are repeatedly coming into the practice for a pain basis. Now, the scenario I'm going to map it out on is for somebody who's a reactivation, but you could also use it for people who may not be a reactivation so much, but they're people who come in more regularly, but it's always sort of pain-based. They'll come in and whether they come in this week or in 2 weeks' time or in 3 weeks' time or whatever is really determined by how much pain they are in. Or sometimes it's people who might be in the early phase of their care and they're giving really strong indications that their orientation around chiropractic is pain-based. So it could be people who are coming in and your CA asks how they are today and they say something like, oh, well, I wouldn't be here if I was good. Or it could be somebody who every time they come in, they feel like they need to give a big download of their symptoms to you. But regardless, what it is it's an opportunity for us to use our communication to kind of widen their perspective on how they can look after their body and how they can use chiropractic. So before we get into the nitty-gritty of that, a couple of announcements. On May 18th, which is a Saturday, I will be teaching a one-day seminar in London, the Daily Visit Communication Intensive. The link is in the show notes. It's a really exciting workshop. I've redone everything in it so that you will go away with your own strategies, your own sort of sequence of things that you do that are aligned with your technique, with your procedures, with your vision for what chiropractic is about, so that you create connection with people on every visit and also you communicate chiropractic in a way that's individually valuable to that person, and you can do it quickly and easily. The intention of the workshop is for you to come out at the end of the workshop with your strategy so that you can get into it straight away. There's not going to be a heap of homework that you have to do. You can just get into getting it done. The weekend after that, I'll be at the Portuguese Chiropractic Association 25th anniversary conference with an amazing speaker lineup. The focus is on communication, caring, and chiropractic, May 24th and 25th in Lisbon. Great conference if you are in Europe or the UK, or if you are coming from outside of that, if you're in Australia or the US, for example, and you want to meet up with some phenomenal chiropractors, do a great program, and get a tax-deductible holiday in Europe. So check it out. The link is in the show notes. So with our people, for instance, who are coming in as a reactivation, and they might have been in a few times, essentially what's happened is that they've had pain, then they had care, the pain went away, they were satisfied for their goals at that point, and then they stopped care. Now, the challenge that we have is that they were happy with that. If they've been through that, the more times they've been through that, there's almost an implied agreement that that's the only way or the best way that they can use your practice. And so us looking at our communication to potentially have them see things differently, there's a couple of challenges there where we're really asking to vary an implied agreement. And if we're not careful with our communication, we run the risk of either explicitly or implicitly making them wrong for the decisions that they're making. And we've spoken about it a lot of times, but generally making people wrong is not a good way of winning people over. And it runs the risk of creating reactance where people react to this sense of somebody trying to influence their decisions and push back against it and choose not to do it, or even just say, look, I don't like this, I don't like that feeling of being pushed to do things, and stop coming in altogether. So how can we address that? How can we effectively help these people maybe see a better way of looking after their bodies and get more value out of chiropractic? So a couple of things we need to understand. First is, people do what they do because they believe what they believe. So we've spoken before about different levels of health belief, a pain level of health belief, a prevention level of health belief, and a wellness or performance level of health belief. And once you have a whatever level you have, there are certain behaviors that are just automatic. Now, if you have a pain level of health belief, it just is natural for you to seek help from a healthcare provider when you are in pain and to stop when you no longer do have pain. Conversely, if we can have people change their level of health belief to more of a performance level of health belief, then it just makes sense to go regularly to proactively keep your body on track, because you realize that doing that is an investment in the things that are most important to you, i.e. your body and its ability to do the things that are important for you. So we're not so much trying to change people's behavior as change their beliefs. So what does change beliefs? Well, the influence literature tells us that there are some things that are super ineffective at changing people's beliefs, what other people tell them, for example. So us telling people who are coming in pain again, well, I told you so, if you'd kept going, you wouldn't be in this situation, or just assuming that because it's come back that they're going to, that you telling them you should be coming in regularly is going to change it, goes against the fundamental understanding of the way the human mind works. So what we need to do then is work at the higher end of that hierarchy. And the thing that has the most powerful impact on people's beliefs and therefore their behavior are the things that they experience. Now, the cool thing about reactivations, and in many ways the other circumstances, is they've just had an experience that kind of demonstrates for them, if you frame it with your communication, the limitation of that pain-based belief, which is that if you don't deal with the underlying problem, the pain comes back. So and on top of that, it's an unpleasant experience that people seek to move away from. And behavioral economists like, say, for instance, Daniel Kahneman, say that in these times where we have something unpleasant that we don't enjoy, we will be four times more likely to move away from that than we would be towards some sort of just obvious, some sort of positive experience, some gain. So there's a real sweet, there's an opportunity here that's been created by what's just happened to them to help them see things in a different light. So how do we use this? There's really three simple steps. Now, because we're essentially coming to this situation with different beliefs as a starting point, we need to, first of all, just not make them wrong. We need to include what they've chosen to do as a reasonable thing. And we do that with bridging, which I'll come to in a minute. But also, we need to, even before we do that, we need to use permission so that we don't get blocking and filtering. So if somebody perceives that you're trying to impinge on their right to make their decisions, they're going to push back against it. So we want to avoid that. The key step then is to ask permission. So you might do that with a reactivation by saying something like, so Dan, would it be okay if I just explained the options that you have in terms of your care moving forward? And just keep it simple. The key thing with permission though is that we need to wait for the yes. It's once they say yes, that they become available to listen to what you have to say. You can't just kind of roll on over the top of, would it be okay if I explained your options for care? The way that you previously done it is you've done things just on a pain base. You could also do it, blah, blah, blah. You've got to wait for the yes. The follow-up to that would be, look, would you be open to me even recommending what we might be able to do to limit the chance, once we deal with the pain part of the problem, what we might be able to do to reduce the chance of this same thing happening again, which is a secondary bridge between pain and prevention. And then when you go into bridge, and once they say yes, again, it's like a second permission. We then move into the third step, which is we use bridging to map out the path ahead. And I'll come back to that in a minute. I want to unpack one thing with the would you be open. This is what Cialdini talks about as a persuasive identity-based opener. It's a lot of words in there, but basically what it is what would you be open essentially is asking a question, and it's a little bit like Cialdini talks about asking people, do you consider yourself a helpful person? And most people do consider themselves a helpful person because they look for hits, not misses. They look for times that they have been helpful rather than times when they've chosen not to be, or aspects of their behavior that aren't helpful. Similarly, if we're asking people, would you be open? Essentially, would you consider yourself an open-minded person? People will generally look at it and go, yeah, look, I'm open. And then if you pose it as, would you be open to me mapping out recommendations to minimize the chance of you being in this same situation again, it's highly likely that they will consider themselves, yeah, I'm an open person, and therefore act in in alignment or consistency with that and say, yeah, that's sure, that sounds great. And then that opens up the opportunity for us to use bridging. So I've been over bridging a bunch of times on this, on the podcast. Key things that have to be there for it to be bridging is you've got to start at the lowest level of health belief and then bridge to higher levels so that you make sure that you include them. So in this situation, it might be, so Dan, when you came in previously, you came in, you had the back pain, we did a series of adjustments, went through a program of care, got the pain under control. And that's what we call the pain phase of care. Now you chose to stop at that point. The other options that we have this time, once we get to that point, are for you to continue care to what we might call prevention care, which is where we deal with the underlying imbalance and minimize the chance of the same sort of thing coming back. Once that's all sorted out, most of our practice is people who have been through that process and then choose to come in on a regular basis to just kind of work against the day-to-day stresses that tend to throw our body a little bit off balance so that they can keep their body working at its best so that they can do all the things that are important to them. Now, in the example, the feedback that I gave from the aligned practice member earlier, she was saying that she'd used their lifestyle to sketch that out. Now, I don't know the specifics of the example, but let's say that Dan was a keen golfer. You could tweak this to make this more individually valuable to Dan by saying something like, so first stage of this is really getting you back out of pain so you can get back out on the course again. And then, you know how last time you stopped at that point, the thing that you could choose to do this time is to deal with that underlying imbalance so that you're not back at this point, not able to play or not able to play well. And then the third phase, that performance phase, for people like you who are keen golfers, often what they notice is, first of all, they're less likely to have injuries. But secondly, because their body's working better, a lot of them notice that their swing is smoother. That often translates into straighter shots. They might even drop a shot or two off their handicap, is what a lot of people have noticed. And just golf and life generally is a lot more fun. Does that all make sense? And then you can loop back into what decision suits them best at that time in their care. So there you have it. A really cool, simple, ethical, effective way of helping people see their health and the value of chiropractic at a higher level. I'd love to hear how you go in trying this out. Please send me a message. My email is in the show notes, and we'll catch you again next time. If you like today's episode, then you will love the Retention Recipe 2.0. It's an online workshop that is broken into 33 lessons and has over 7 hours of content, which will teach you to confidently communicate the value of proactive chiropractic in the first 12 visits. So if we want to have long-term retention, if we want people to stay with us for months, years, and reap the really amazing health benefits that happen with long-term chiropractic care, we need to set the foundation for that in the first 12 visits. So the approaches in the Retention Recipe 2.0 are based on state-of-the-art influence strategies that are effective, ethical, and they're enjoyable to use. They will help you to have more fun, less stress, and increase your retention, which means more practice growth and less always being on the hunt for new people. Check it out in the link in the show notes.